Welcome to PTW Office Hours, where we invite authors, writers, publishing professionals to have casual conversations around craft. Grab your journal, a cup of tea or coffee, and get ready to take notes. This is PTW Office Hours, brought to you by Permission to Write.
All right, welcome to another episode of the PTW Office Hours podcast. I am very excited today because I have two guests that are amazing women and even more so commanders of their craft in writing. So I remember moving to LA 2 years ago and so many people were saying that there is no literary community here, okay? A very East Coast, New York vibes, hating on the LA community of literature. They were like, you're only going to meet screenwriters. And so not that screenwriters are bad people at all, but I was more than thrilled to stumble into meeting these two phenomenal authors among a group of, you guessed it, mostly debut authors out here in LA. And so I am very thrilled to have them on as we'll discuss the power of book clubs with Ana Reyes, author of The House in the Pines, which was Arisa's book club pick, and Diane Marie Brown, who is on her way. She is going to be popping into this chat shortly, and who is the author of Black Candle Women, which was a Jenna Reeves pick. So welcome, Ana. I'm so happy to have you.
Thank you so much, Ashley. It's really exciting to be here. So thank you for inviting me.
Oh, absolutely. And here is Diane popping on as well. So I guess while we wait for Diane to come on, tell us a little bit about your adventure in writing, how you really decided that you wanted to venture into writing and that it was going to be a career for you.
Well, I started writing pretty young. I wrote my first story at the age of 11. And the reason I did it was because I was such a big reader. I was that kid who I moved around a lot growing up. So I was kind of always the new girl and I didn't always have a ton of friends for that reason, or it would take me a while to to meet people. So I always had a book in my hand. A lot of times I would sit at lunch with a book in my hand. So I was a big reader and I was spending a lot of time at the public library in my new town, which was Pittsfield, Massachusetts. And the library held a children's writing contest. Now, I never thought of myself as a writer at 11. I never even considered writing. But when I learned that the prize for this contest was a gift card to a local bookstore, I decided to become a writer right then and there because I really wanted that gift card so I could buy more books. So this was the start of my writing journey. I wrote a story. And at the time, I was reading a lot of Christopher Pike, R.L. Stein. Those of you who are born in the 80s probably know who I'm talking about. 80s, 90s, and even late 70s. These are very popular YA writers who are writing mostly fantasy and horror and thrillers. So these were stories about, kids who were, being chased by demons and monsters and, serial killers. And somehow these were the stories that I really gravitated towards. So that first story that I wrote, by hand, was about a girl who gets lost in the woods and she stumbles upon a house. So that was my first story. I did not win the contest. And it was a long time before I tried any kind of writing again. And when I did, it was mostly poetry in my teens and in my 20s. And then in my 20s, I started adventuring, kind of slowly dipping my toe in the water of short fiction, wrote a few stories. And then in my late 20s, when I was 28, I got laid off from my job. So I realized at that point, okay, I'm going to need to figure something else out. My degree was in first journalism, and then I ended up changing to communication. So it was kind of general. There was no real obvious path. So I just thought, I'm going to give it a shot. I love writing. I never really thought this is something I could do as a profession, but I'm going to give it a shot. It's now or never. So what I did was I applied to MFA programs all across the country. And the beauty of MFA programs is that most of them, or a lot of them, are fully funded. So you might teach a class or two, but other than that, you're writing full time. And these programs are 2 to 3 years. I was lucky to get into a 3-year one that paid just enough that I could not work. So I was living in Louisiana, not working, and just writing. And that's when I wrote The House in the Pines. Ooh. So I finished it in my last year of the program, 2015. And at that point, I set it aside for over a year while I, moved back to LA. I got married. I had to find a job. I was teaching, just kind of settling back into my life. And eventually I picked it back up and I edited it a lot. I did extensive revisions before I tried to find an agent. When I found an agent, she had further revisions. So she had a lot of insight herself, having an MFA in fiction and, you know, doing some writing herself. She had amazing insight, not just on, you know, little things here and there, but on the genre level. She felt that I had written what was basically a thriller. You know, there was a mystery, there was some horrifying things and scary moments, but it didn't really have that very specific sort of feel or set of elements or tropes that really make for a compelling thriller. So at that point, I just dove back into, research and reading. I read all those books that I used to love, like by Stephen King. I read Shirley Jackson, Patricia Highsmith. I read all these authors who I loved, but now not as a reader. I was reading them as a writer. And I was identifying, okay, how do they do this? What, you know, what's going on here? And how can I emulate that? So my agent was extremely generous with her time. She worked with me almost 2 years to get my book to the point where she was like, you know, okay, this is it. We can sell it. So she did. She went out, she sold it. It was acquired by Dutton, Penguin Random House. And yeah, the rest is history. That was sort of, you know, it was a 7-year journey from when I started writing it to when, it was finally done. It was a marathon, but it all worked out. So I'm just really grateful.
Yeah. And even longer in a sense, right? Because you were still doing that writing at 11, right? I feel like it's so important to hear these journeys, just because sometimes we think it's supposed to happen quickly for us. So tell us, Diane, Anna and I were saying, we know you're so tired of talking about how the book came to be, but also that you might be very well rehearsed in talking about how A Black Candle Women came to be.
Yeah. So it's actually kind of a similar story as far as this book. I had written, wanted to be a writer for a long time, and I had actually written a couple of other books, and had an agent for one of the books and went through the whole process, but that book never sold. And after going through that process, wanting to get more, work on my craft a lot more, because just, you know, some people just are good as readers. And as you were describing, Anna, just reading as a writer and learning from other great writers, other great storytellers on what they do that works really well. But I felt that I needed to go through a program to really walk me through and help me improve my craft. So I went, after writing those books, I went back to school through a local writing program in Southern California. And that is where I started Black Candle Woman. It was a response to I don't even remember the prompt, but it was just, I think it's supposed to be a scene that really introduced me to the woman in the story and just kind of grew from there. So the first 100 pages of the book ended up being my thesis. And then after I graduated, I worked on it for a few more months and finished a draft that I didn't let other people read, which was a big mistake. And I edited it, but not like a deep edit, like now I know that I should have done at that part of its journey. So I started sending it out and got a little bit of feedback, but I didn't get like requests for fulls at first. So that's when I kind of stepped back and did a little bit more of a deeper edit, but then revised and submitted trying to find an agent for quite a few years, and not continuously. I would like put it away and I would go back to it. And then after a while, I just said, well, hey, maybe it's time to move on and work on something else. I really love the story. I really love the characters, but just wasn't making a lot of headway. So I put it away, started working on something else. And then in 2020, there was an open call by a publishing house under HarperCollins, looking for fiction from Black writers who didn't have agents. And so I responded to that open call, and they didn't promise publication for anyone, but they said they would give feedback, detailed feedback, more than what you just get, like a form letter, or sometimes you're lucky to just get that when you hear back from agents. And so I was like, yeah, that would be great. And so I submitted my query through that process. And there was an editor there who requested the full manuscript. And it took a few months, but after they went through their whole process, I think they got over 900 submissions, and they had to give feedback to all those people. So after they got through all that, I think there were a few of us that they offered publication to. So that happened in early 2021. So and then they helped me find my agent. So I kind of did things backwards, but it was just kind of off from the to the races from that point. So.
And I love that, because we even talk about doing things backwards, right? But there's really no one way. So was it really backwards, or was it really just your journey?
Sure.
And I think it's so powerful to have like those different experiences of how things come to be. By the way, I never thought I was going to sell my first book. so I feel like it must have just been a timing thing, because everyone told me, they're like, you're not going to sell your first book. So I just think there's so many ways to really come to it. So, you know, you all really worked so hard, which it paid off, right? Because I think you all had some amazing release years. But once you moved into that marketing phase, went through the edits with the publisher, did you feel like it would really be in your cards to be a selection for one of these major national book clubs? I know that like some of those listening might not realize, like most times when you're on a big five publisher or an imprint thereof, you would get pitched to these book clubs. But what was your thought process in some of those marketing calls kind of first? Like, did you feel like you had any idea that it would be a possibility, or did you try to kind of downplay it and not think about it?
I had no idea. When I got my call from my editor, she was like, oh, I have some news. Let's jump on a Zoom. And I didn't know if it was going to be good news or bad news. So I was just kind of like waiting for the Zoom the next day, very apprehensive, like, what's this going to be? And she gets on, and she and my agent are both there, and they're like, you're a Reese's book club pick. And I was shocked, because I was like, I didn't even know at that point. I don't think I knew that they didn't tell me that they were submitting it to them. So I had no idea that I was even under consideration. I had no idea that, that they would be considering me, that this was even something that I would ever be considered for as a debut author. So I was just really shocked, really surprised. And they were, they said, you have to keep it a secret for the next months, because, Reese herself is the one who announces it on Instagram, and you have to make sure it doesn't get out first. So that was really hard to keep it quiet all that time. But it was life-changing, because I think that having it be part of a book club allowed it to reach so many more people that it would have otherwise. That's a really big platform that I just simply didn't have. I think I had maybe like a couple hundred followers on Instagram, maybe like 15 on Twitter. I was not on Twitter, except for hit started after I sold the book, and was not really using it much. So it was just completely shocking. And I think it was a huge game changer.
Love that. How about for you, Diane?
Yeah, I'd say the same. I know that we were kind of, in editing the book, we were working towards a specific date so that it could be reviewed for, I think it was the Indies Introduce program, which is they, it's booksellers who pick debut books to kind of highlight. And so I was very like excited about that, but we were just trying to get a draft ready for that. And that wasn't even the final draft, but we got something in and they're like, oh yeah, we'll send it to the book clubs in this place and this place. And so that was really the only mention of it. And even when they said book clubs, I wasn't thinking anything like this. And cause I always thought with those types of book clubs, that they, you know, they pick it like the month before. And so that's when you hear about it. So it was not even in my thought process until I got a call. So my book was scheduled to come out February 28th of 23. I got a call in mid-August of 22 or an email from my editor asking if I could get on a call. And I'd only talked to my editor on the phone like one other time. We're very email based. And so I was like, oh no, what's gonna, are they canceling the book? Like it's gotta be something really bad if she wants to hop on a call, except for the fact that she said, good news or nice news. So I'm like, okay, I'm glad she said the nice news part because I would have just been stressing, but she wanted to confirm a time with my agent to join us. And so a few hours later, they get me on the call and they said, you know, are you sitting down? And I said, yes. And they said, do you have any champagne? And I said, I was out of town. I'm like, no, but I could get some. And then they shared the news. And I was just like, so I was just in shock. It was kind of the most surreal thing, especially because we were so far away from my pub date. Like I wasn't even kind of in that marketing mindset yet or anything. I was just kind of taking a few weeks to be glad that I was out of editing for a while and trying to get blurbs, I think is where I was. And so, yeah, it was pretty amazing and shocking. But the same thing with, as Anna said, having that sort of a platform for a debut is really kind of, it makes a big difference. And so I'm just incredibly grateful. And that, having that connection to Jenna Bush and being able to be on the Today Show has just been really, really incredible.
I love it. So who were the first people that you told? Because I met these two women, y'all, at a very chill hang. And we were all talking about books coming out and they were talking about their when their books were coming out. And it was the end of 2022. And it was just like, oh yeah, it was so unassuming. And then all of a sudden, it was Anna's first. I was like, wait a minute, she's a Reese Witherspoon pick, you know? And I just couldn't believe, quite frankly, very humbly, that I was like sitting at a table of these like amazing women writers. All of them, whether picked for book clubs or not, are phenomenal writers and have really great debuts. So who were the first people you told?
I told my husband. They were like, you can tell your husband, but you can't tell anyone else. but I, other than that, I didn't, I just tried to, it didn't work. I just tried to make myself kind of forget. And sometimes I'd make a little mistake here and there. But having that much time and then seeing all these other, and I followed all the other book club picks as well. So now I feel like I can tell which are going to be the book club picks. There's kind of signs that I'm sure Anna might say the same thing, but I can kind of tell based on some positioning. And I always look to see like, oh, who are you following? Oh, are you only following Reese and you're not following the other book clubs? Oh, maybe that tells me something. I don't know. But yeah, I was pretty good about not telling them. I think like 2 days before, like the Sunday before the book came out, I told like my close friends. Because at that time I'm like, well, if they say something, you know, Kat's going to be out of the bag anyway.
No, that's cool. Was it the same for you, Anna? Like your essentially you could tell, you were able to tell your husband.
Yeah, so I told my husband and he was really excited, but he doesn't have a big mouth. So I knew he wasn't going to tell anyone. And then I told my mom because I was like, I just, you know, I'm really close to my mom. And I was every step of the way, I was like telling her now this is happening. Now this is happening. So I just, I waited and then I was like, I'm going to go ahead and tell my mom. And I had to tell her, I was like, if you tell anyone, like, you're going to ruin my career. Like you can't. And she said, she was like, okay, so basically I can't leave the house until your book comes out because it's going to be that hard not to tell anyone. So it was as hard for her as it was for me. And I think the thing that kept me from telling anyone was I just kept imagining like, cause I would look at every video when Reese came out. You know, I was going back and seeing her making the announcement and she just looked so excited and happy. And I was like, okay, do I want to be the person that disappoints Reese Witherspoon? How can I live with myself if I disappointed Reese Witherspoon? So that was something that I, every time I thought of, like, I have to tell someone, I would just remind myself of that. But yeah, it was really hard. And it was something that, you know, like Diane is saying, you can kind of tell when, you know, a book is getting, because I think that, you know, once we knew that it was Reese's book club, then my publisher, who had already been really great, then they even stepped it up more because they were like, you know, this is going to be big. So we're going to really amp up our marketing so that, you know, to sort of capitalize on the momentum that we'll get from the book club pick. So I think that, you know, I think that these selections are made months in advance and a lot of thought goes into, you know, how that will really alter the sort of trajectory of the whole publicity and marketing campaign.
Yeah, I think it's important because you're talking about two different kind of aspects. There's always like craft and commerce, you know, and I feel like we talk a lot about that on this podcast in particular. And so I think it's cool that we heard about just such the long and arduous journey to like get the book to a great place, right? Like starting to write the book, did not have this idea of being a Jenna Reed's pick or a Reese's Book Club pick. Like, you know what I mean? It just was telling a great story, telling a story that you wanted to tell, falling in love with the characters, and then getting such exciting and great news to give it the momentum that books need, which is so awesome and definitely something to underscore, I feel like. So tell me about what was like completely unexpected in the journey. What was kind of like, oh my God, you know, whether good or bad, within reason, right? We're trying to keep you in good graces with your book clubs for more picks in the future, but just anything unexpected kind of with having so many eyes or attention on the book, even if in a good light that you're like, oh, I just didn't think about this.
You go first, Diane.
Oh, I'm trying to think. I mean, I guess I didn't realize just the level, just the energy level and just the, like, I still think back to Pub Day and just how wonderful it was but how exhausting it all was. Like, I feel like I didn't enjoy, I mean, not saying I didn't enjoy it. I didn't like take the time to like take it all in. Yeah. And it just flew by. It was a blur. And I just wish I would have maybe slowed down and like let it soak in, appreciated it, but it was just kind of a whirlwind. I mean, you did my book event with me that I was almost that I was late to. And then the rest of the month, it was just so many different events and activities, which was great. And then a few months later, it's just like, all right, everything's very slow now. And so it's just a very compact, intense, time, a wonderful time. at. And then it's just kind of not quite crickets, but it's just such a big change in the momentum fairly quickly. But it makes sense, right? Every Tuesday there's new wonderful books that are coming out and by these great authors and people having similar experiences. And so it's important for us as writers to put the work in, finding new ways to talk about our books, to share our books. But yeah, it's just the experience of debuting. I think it was all just, not all, but there was a lot of just unexpected moments. And so I'm excited to do it again. I mean, I can't debut again, but I I would like to, hopefully publish more books in the future but enjoy things a little bit more.
Yes, Diane was fresh off the plane for her book launch here in LA. She had jumped time zones, flying from New York to Los Angeles to do her book launch event. I cannot even fathom how she mustered up any energy at that point. So I totally hear you on that. How about for you, Anna?
I would echo a lot of that. I mean, the whole thing was just it was such a rush. It was just all of these things, everything all at once. Yes. So I think that, like, in retrospect, I look back and I'm like, wow, that was so incredible. I'm glad I took pictures because it was speeding by so fast that it was almost hard to, like, experience it fully in the moment. I think another thing about, especially being part of a book club, is that the point of the club is to foster discussion about the books. So you end up getting people talking about these and, tagging you in these discussions or, otherwise letting you know what the discussions are. And so it's very moving to see that, like, this thing that I wrote, for almost a decade alone in my room, nobody was ever going to, like, all of a sudden people are talking about the characters, like they're real people. And so getting to see the discussion that comes out of, I think any book that gets published, there's the discussion, but I think especially when it's a book club and the point is to foster discussion, I think you really get a lot of that. And it's just very, it's strangely intimate because it's like, this is so close to my heart. This is something that was so solitary for me for so long. And all of a sudden other people are talking about it. It's like extremely, like, moving. It can also be kind of scary because, of course, not everybody's going to like your book. Like, that's just the reality. No matter what you write, there's going to be people who hate it. And so you end up hearing that too. And that can be, I think I always thought to myself, if I'm ever so lucky to get a book published, I'm not going to be one of those people who cares about reviews. I'm not going to, like, I'm going to read all the reviews. It's not going to bother me at all. But then cut to, like, after I published my book and every bad review is like a kick in the heart.
Yeah.
Now I don't read any reviews. I don't, I haven't looked at Goodreads probably since like a month after the book came out. I just stopped. I don't go there. I don't look at anyone's, but especially not my own. So I think it's much more vulnerable than people might think or that even writers might expect before their book comes out, to just see how many people, to see just like so vividly exactly what people think of your book.
It's so, you touched on a lot of different things. One of which kind of was my next question was about community. But I feel like I too recently, I was looking for something else and some stuff for my book popped up and I like landed on Barnes and Noble and I was like, why are we here and why are we reading reviews that were left on Barnes and Noble? Like, why is this happening? So absolutely a bad idea to read those things.
Terrible.
I think there's a quote that I love and it's been said in many ways, but I feel like I kind of hold on to the way Pharrell said it. And he said, you don't listen to your ego when it's up, when you're up, and you don't listen to your ego when you're down. Right. So it's even like important to, we always think about the bad reviews, but it's also good, like, not to get too inflated of the people who love your book either, kind of keep yourself right in the middle. Cause I think the next iteration of that is like, if you live by their praise, then you'll die by their criticism, So I think it's so important. But you touched on this really great part about like community. And so I think you kind of spoke to it a bit in regard to particularly with a book club that is like really focused around folks discussing it. But has community popped up in any other ways that you didn't expect maybe for both of you around the novel? Like, because this is such a community-based thing, like, what have been some of the other things that maybe you've taken part in that feel, or, you know, has anybody launched any fan fiction about Black Candle Women or the House of the Pines, or like, what have been some of the other elements that you wouldn't have expected because people are so endeared to the book?
Well, I mean, just kind of some cool things that people like, somebody made a, or I think a couple of people made like candles, that, and they connected to like my publisher, or they connected to, Jenna Bush Hager with them.
Sorry,
took out my headphones so I can show, but this is, I haven't even used it yet. Somebody Beautiful. Made this candle called Love Hex,
I
think is so, so cool. You know, just kind of, somebody made like some cookies with, the cover of the book on it. So just, you know, people that are doing these really cool things and sharing them, or when, somebody posted the other day, like their book club is going to go to New Orleans and eat lots of food because Black Candle Woman is, some of it takes place in New Orleans. And so they're like, our book club is inspired by this book for this trip. And I'm like, that is, you know, that those types of things related to communities have been pretty cool. So
that is beautiful.
Yeah. And I would echo that too. Things on Instagram. One of my favorites was an account that I hope I'm getting this right, but I think it's called Need to Read, like K-N-E-A-D, like Need to Read. And she does baking projects based off books. So with mine, there is a key that plays an important role in the story. It's kind of like a clue, and then it ends up tying into the story. So she made these cupcakes that had this little like candy key on top. And it was just so cool to see like this whole tray of cupcakes. And she did like kind of a mini review of the book. And that was just such a cool thing to see, like, wow, somebody created something based off of my creation. And that was just really exciting. And then also maybe it was a few months after the book came out, or a month or so, we did a partnership, my publisher, with other, with a group of four Latinx creators. And there's a ceramicist, there was, I believe, a body care company. And then my favorite was, there's this company called Golden Palms. And I think it's just one woman, but it's a small business. She's a Latinx creator. And she made a perfume that was called Deep Woods. And it was based off the book. And it was really exciting because when I smelled it, I was like, okay, I get this completely. Because it has like the pine smell, the forest pine. But then there was like a little bit of like smoke, because in my prologue, there's like this fireplace burning. So you could smell like a little bit of smoke. And I smelled the night air. That might have been me reading into it, but I felt like it kind of smelled like the night air. So I'm reading it and I'm like, it's just so amazing that this woman was able to take words and somehow turn them into like a scent. And I wear that perfume like pretty much every day now, because it was just one of the most exciting things that happened.
I love that. It's so powerful that people would spend their time, like you said, to create off of something that you put out in the world. I mean, I can only imagine it's like when we're dressed up for Halloween as like these favorite characters and stuff like that from TV shows or whatever, like just that impact, that ripple effect that can happen. So those are so amazing, like a whole perfume, candles, like this is so cool. I love it. So I feel like, you know, we've kind of broached the topic a little bit, but there was a 2019 article from NPR where Kristen McLean from NPD BookScan said book club sales overperform at 500% to the rest of the market. and in an article from The Guardian, that they referenced that being selected for a book club was referenced as a ticket to success. So what are your thoughts on what that kind of means to you in your journey? Do you feel like that's an accurate depiction, that a book club pick is like a ticket to success?
I would say I do think so. I think that I certainly reached a lot more readers than I would have. And I love to hear that. I didn't know that statistic about the 500%. That's amazing. I think it certainly sort of like set, it sort of paved the way for me to be able to keep doing this, which is what I love. It also sets an expectation because I think because this first book read so, reached so many readers, it sort of makes me feel like, okay, can I do this again? You know, it's like to have this at the very beginning sort of sets up this expectation. Like I want it to always be like this, but realistically it might not be. And so it's both an extreme blessing. That's I think the highlight, but it also comes with a set of expectations for the rest of your career.
Ooh. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. And again, like I'm so grateful, and I just feel very lucky and very blessed to have had this opportunity. But it does, it is a little frustrating that you have to have that connection to a book club to get exposure, right? I wish that there were other ways that we could really put a focus on writers. And it's great that Jenna and Reese do make a point, I think, of finding debut writers and writers of color and diverse stories. So I think that is something, a great model that that they use in their book club selections. And it's, you're starting to see other well-known people really spotlight books, if not a book club, but they're sharing their books, that things that they're reading, or they're being connected to reading communities. So hopefully we'll see more of that, because kind of what we talked about earlier, with being a book club pick, your publisher is likely going to put more marketing dollars. It's kind of this cyclical effect that there's more marketing behind it, and all those things add up. And so it's definitely it makes sense that these books would outperform, mm-hmm. or perform fairly well. But it would be wonderful if, all books can get that same level of marketing or push or publicity, because there's so many stories that that would be opportunities for the right audience to connect if they kind of got that same level of exposure. But not to say that I'm not incredibly grateful and thankful. It's been just amazing. One thing that I forgot to mention, as I should have said this as kind of my surprise moment or whatever. My mom, who's passed away, but her favorite show in the world was Jeopardy. And never in a million years did I think that I would have any connection to Jeopardy. But I was part of a Jeopardy question with my photo because of being a book club pick with, it was a whole category about Jenna Bush Hager and her book club picks. And so Black Candle Woman was connected to one of the answers on Jeopardy. So that was the craziest thing that happened this entire process for me. And I'm just still kind of in shock that that actually happened.
Oh, I love it. And I love that connectivity, that it was your mom's favorite show. Yeah. That was just like ordained. and you know, two things can be true, Diane. You know, I totally hear you in like, yes, this is an amazing opportunity for any debut author, but you know, two things can kind of be true in regard to trying to create more momentum for stories across the board. And I think in 2020, a lot of people saw that like books seem to, like everybody realized like books are great again. like, you know what I mean? Because no one could do anything. And then book sales kind of skyrocketed at that time. And if there's any good thing, I feel like too, is that there maybe are more book clubs. Because I remember... Yeah. Oprah starting her book club, what is it? I think it was like 26 years ago now. I think I had a note on it. It's either 23 or 26 years ago. And me being like, oh, I'm never going to get selected for Oprah. I was like, I am not deep enough to ever be selected for an Oprah book club. And so I feel like there's all these really great opportunities to find more diverse stories, because of course Oprah's book club is still going and wonderful and still doing the thing. But like you mentioned, these really great focuses around debuts, people of color, women's stories, you mm-hmm. know, championing those. I think it just kind of opens the field for more opportunity for everybody. So I love it. So before we jump into our segments, I just wanted to ask, is there anything you haven't been asked that you want to share about the book? I know you have all been on all the press of the press, right? But is there just this one thing that you're just like, you know, let me just say this about my book and why I love it. We'll kind of give some space for that.
One thing that I don't think has come up a lot, it's come up in like little small ways here and there, is that my book is a thriller. You know, I think it's, you know, it's fast paced. It's designed to be the kind of book that you tear through, but there also is a little bit of history in there. So for me, getting to write a little bit about the Guatemalan Civil War, which is something that I did not learn about in school. I think most American students did not learn about the Guatemalan Civil War in school. So the fact that I was able to kind of shoehorn it in there really meant a lot to me, because I felt like, you know, this is a book that you're designed to just kind of tear through. It's supposed to be fun, escapism. But I really appreciate that they selected a book where there was also like this little seed of a history lesson, almost like a Trojan horse it in there. And people have really responded well to it. So I didn't know if people were going to like that. And I guess that's something that I'd want to say is just like, I'm just really happy and really grateful to the readers that this is something they rolled with. You know, I haven't really got a lot of complaints about it. So I'm just really glad that like in this day and age, you can write a thriller, you can write an escapist book, but you can also put in some like real substance.
Oh, I love that. That's exactly how I feel about being in a romance genre. Like, I feel like my book kind of got pushed to romance, but I felt like, oh, there's so much more in this story, you know, but fine. If we want to call it a romance, great. The love story is integral, but I felt like there was a lot about career and family and kind of just like sneaking those things in there. And I definitely tore through the House in the Pines. I was like, what's happening here? You know, you're really trying to figure out like, what is going on here? So absolutely. I love that, putting those nuggets in there and like tying in cultural elements, you know, which are just great. How about for you, Diane?
I don't know if I've been asked this directly, but it kind of ties into what both of you were talking about with genre and some, you know, I was just in the UK and I went to a bookstore and I thought my book might be in there, but I didn't want to ask because that's always kind of weird, especially if it's not there. But my husband was with me, and so he had gone to on the other side and he asked, oh, is this, you know, do you have Black Handle Woman? And they're like, yeah, we have 7 copies. And I had already gone and I looked and I'm like, well, I haven't seen my book. And there, the guy said, oh, it's up in science fiction. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's interesting. And so just kind of the way that the book has been categorized, I think is so interesting. Because I, so people have talked about Black Candlewoman as science fiction, as speculative. And I never thought, I mean, now I can see it, but before publication, I never really thought of it being in any kind of genre category. I just thought of it as straight fiction or commercial fiction, because the magic in it, I kind of see as just, that's just life, like regular life magic that we always see. So, yes, sometimes I'm not putting it in any kind of category. I think it's great that people find in it what they want or describe it in whatever category that I guess speaks to them the most.
I love it. It's a little magic realism. Like Pearl Cleage to me just kind of throws things in there that you're like, wait, did someone just fly? Did somebody just, you know, what happened here? But like you said, there's like these elements of magic in everyday life, right? That aren't kind of as far-fetched as one might think. Mm-hmm. So jumping into our segments to wrap this wonderful chat, we like to highlight a section we call the canon. And in this, we want to ask you which writer you would highlight based on the following three criteria, right? So first and foremost, starting off with a writer whose online or public persona you would highlight. I know Anna and I talked a little bit about this.
I thought of one.
Oh, okay. Awesome. Awesome. I was going to say, we're always good for a little twist or pivot. But yes, so a writer whose online or public persona you would want to highlight.
I can start with, so the one that I thought of was Mona Awad. She wrote this book called Bunny that is just like TikTok famous, like beyond TikTok famous. And it's a book about some MFA students. It gets very weird. And these MFA women are always calling each other Bunny. And people on TikTok, this video became so popular on TikTok, people began to get little bunnies tattooed on their, like, on their bodies. And I was like, wow, like, that's the kind of marketing that you cannot create. There's no PR person who can convince readers to tattoo something on their body. But somehow this book, and also I think Mona Awad, like, as an online presence, just really inspires people. And her last book was called Rouge. It was a sort of fairy tale-esque story about basically a woman who becomes obsessed with skincare after her mother dies. And she finds out that her mother was involved in this sort of like cult of beauty. And you're just like, what is going on here? But it dips into themes of, you know, like we as women, how far will we go to keep our skin looking good? You know, I think for a lot of us, it's pretty far. So reading that book was like, it was horrific and it was enchanting at the same time. And I think she does a good job of sort of curating that same feel in her online presence.
Oh, very cool. How about for you, Diane?
That's a great question. I was trying to think, like, who do I really like to follow? And whose posts do I like to see? So, Tia Williams, she's, we have the same agent. And she writes romance. Her last book was 7 Days in June. But I really like her posts because I think she has a good balance of information about her book and about writing. But I like kind of her other posts. So she worked in the beauty industry for many years, and she was a journalist. And so I just like hearing about products that she uses, or, you know, just, she does a lot of like fashion related posts. And, I kind of like seeing that from writers, like other sides to them, especially if there's kind of a creative connection. I really like, I say this as I'm sitting here and just like my old ratty Adidas shirt, but I really like fashion. I don't do very well with it, but I like to look at fashion, and I like authors that are very fashionable. Actually, and I'll throw you in that category, Ashley, because I look at your, I like looking at your posts and when you just share like what you're wearing. I love those types of posts because I don't know, it's just kind of another side of authors.
I love that. I mentioned Tia Williams too, which is so funny. But thank you. It's so kind. So how about for writing voice? Whose writing voice are you just like enamored with?
It's for me, I just finished Cynthia Sinclair's How to Say Babylon. It's not fiction, but she's a poet and it comes through so beautifully in just her, like every sentence, it's like crafted. It's like, her language is so gorgeous. I'm just like, you know, in awe of her saying something very simply, but she says it so eloquently. And so I think poets make such great writers of longer types of prose. And so, yeah, that's just the latest book that, or one of the latest books that I've read that I've just been in awe of.
Love it. Yeah, I agree with that 100%. The poets, some of my favorite writers started off as poets, and a writer that I'm really loving lately is Margot Duwayhe. She has written she's writing a series of books called the Sister Holiday Mysteries. And they're about this queer tattooed nun of all things, who's like a chain smoker who finds herself solving crimes in New Orleans. And her first book was called Scorched Grace. I loved it. And her second book, I actually just got an early copy because I'm going to be in conversation with her in March when her book comes out. But so that book is called Blessed Water. It comes out in March. And she too is a poet. And so she might be writing about like a crime scene. She might be writing about like, you know, discovering a dead body, but she's writing about it in the voice of a poet. So she's capturing these, you know, sometimes very ugly things in a very beautiful way. And to me, that's very, just very arresting. She also has a great way of writing about. Each book sort of has like a color. Scorched Grace, there's all this fire, there's all this crimson. And in Blessed Water, it's very blue. Like there's a storm going on, there's rain, there's water. So she just has this way of sort of imbuing her writing with poetry and very elemental sort of imagery.
I'm trying to unmute myself. But yeah, I feel like... I also always feel like poets are like, I always say that poets are like the best of us. They just like have the best ways of describing things. Mm-hmm. And I also really have enjoyed specifically their memoirs. I don't know. It's something about the way they're like recounting life experience that's great. And then someone I saw recently said that novelists are like failed poets or something like that. And I was like, that might be true. I wrote poetry for a stint, you know? I definitely decided to put the poetry down and was like, you know what? I'm really better at this character development. And and the last one is just word choice or command of language. So my example for this is always like Toni Morrison. I did not grow up reading Toni Morrison, so I'm definitely a late, you know, my mother was such a huge influence on my reading. My mom always was like, Toni Morrison is too deep. I can't, you know, so I never got those books passed down. She probably owns all of them, but never got those passed down. So I've really ventured into it more once I became a writer, trying to, you know, you want to go back to see why people are so amazing. And once I started reading Toni Morrison, I was like, oh, she's just different with this language thing. Like, she is just different. So that's the last one. How about word choice or command of language?
Well, I would certainly second Toni Morrison. When I read Beloved, I think I was like in my early 20s and I had never read anything like that before. I I was just shocked by, I mean, it's in some ways it's a horror novel, you know, it's like, it's very visceral and very disturbing, but it's written in just this style that you're not reading, you're like living it. You're more living her language than you are like ingesting it. So I would definitely second her. I think that's the first one that comes to me too. So I think that's my answer.
Love it. How about for you, Diane?
And I would also agree with that. but I also really, I mean, probably my top favorite writer is Zora Neale Hurston. And, you know, she's not using, you know, the same type of words as, you know, she's not using these super rich, eloquent words, but I like her word choice, if that's what we're really kind of thinking about, because she imbues humor in a lot of what she writes. And I think it comes down to the words that she chooses to use. A lot of it is with a dialogue of her characters, but it's also just in observations that characters are making outside of dialogue. But a lot of what makes, I think, the story so appealing are the words that she chooses to use in her sentences. So just to give us something a little bit different. But yeah, Tony,
that's the cheat code. I mean, that's the, you know, that's the top of the tie. I, you know, I yeah. like to just give an example. Maybe that was too strong of an example. however, no, I totally feel you in that, like, you know, J. California Cooper is one of my faves in regard to language as well. And to your point, like the approach to language is might be slightly different, but it's the choice, right? It's these kind of like opportunities that happen. And I've always considered myself a plain writer, for lack of a better term, but I feel like my writing has a strong voice though. Like, you know what I mean? So it all works together for the good.
Yeah.
To give us a diverse library. So this very last segment is quick. This is lightning round. So just what comes to you first, and it should be fun because I'm not sure I've done it with two guests yet. And I want to see if anything is conflicting. So this is a segment about writing cliches. I just want you to give me a yay or nay based on these writing cliches. The first one is write every day.
I'm going to go with nay.
How about for you, Diane? Okay, nay. Two nays. All right. Write drunk, edit sober.
Yes.
I don't know if you could write drunk. I think it's unfortunately write and edit sober, for better or for worse.
Love it. You cannot draft and edit at the same time.
I say no.
Yeah, I think you can do it. Yeah, I would say no. I would say that. I'm thinking about how you said it. I would agree that you probably can do a little bit of that. So nay.
Okay. Show don't tell.
Ideally, you're doing more showing than telling, but my editor is constantly like, but how does she feel? So I find myself adding in a lot of tell afterwards.
I love it.
Yeah. I don't mind a little bit of telling. I'm okay with some telling. Yeah.
This is good. This is good. Kill your darlings.
Yes.
Yes.
I feel like I want to pile on to that. Like, yes, that was like such the biggest lesson I had to learn of editing a first book was like, it just sounds good. It's not moving the story forward, you know, at those moments. And the last one, and often the most controversial, Oxford comma. I feel like it depends on what area of writing you're coming from, how controversial this is.
I feel strongly in support, very strongly in support of the Oxford comma.
I don't even know. So the Oxford comma is something I never really thought about until my husband does. He reads everything that I write and he'll be like, sometimes you use the Oxford comma and sometimes you don't. So I think I'm using commas in a very like fast and loose way. And I'm just trying to wrap my head around being consistent because that's just not something like I never really thought about commas before I started writing, you know, like at this level. And so now I'm just like trying to be consistent, but hoping that I can mostly leave that up to a copy editor.
I love it. Well, I come from a journalism background where it's no Oxford comma, I think. Like with if it's AP style or one of the like popular styles that people use for journalism. It's been a while. I do not actively write as much for publications, but I feel like at the time it was like Oxford commas weren't a thing. But I am a fan of commas, love them, even just for dramatic pauses. So I would say that I support that message. Well, I want to thank you both so much for joining me for this podcast. These women are just so amazing, and I'm so glad that they said yes to chatting with me. Of course, I've gotten to share space and time with them, which is great, but it's also nice that they share their time here. So we are going to link to the books in the show notes, of course, so that you can pick those up if you haven't already. But thank you so much, ladies, for joining the podcast.
Thank you for listening to PTW Office Hours. We hope you got something out of the conversation. You can follow us on Instagram at Permission to Write, on Twitter at Perm to Write, and stay up to date through our website, permissiontowrite.com. Join our community that works to amplify and cultivate the voices of Black writers and writers of color.